So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Dr. Therese Jorgensen of the National Science Foundation. Dr. Jorgensen has master's degrees in physics and mathematics from Aarhus University in Denmark. She got her PhD in theoretical physics from the University of Oxford in the United Kingdom. About 10 years, she has done space physics research at the Danish Space Research Institute and at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center. 3 years ago, she joined the National Science Foundation as Program Director in Upper Atmosphere Research Section, which is a division of the Atmospheric Sciences Department. So please, give Dr. Therese Jorgensen a warm welcome.
Yes, it's a really great pleasure for me to be here and talk about our new program. And I'm extremely grateful to the CubeSat program that they managed to fit this session into their workshop. In particular, I don't know if everybody in the audience knows, but we're actually trying something new for the CubeSat workshop. We are trying to webcast this via a live audio stream to allow people to also listen into this remotely. So I'll talk a little bit here before I start my presentation to try that out and we see if it all works. So hopefully somebody will call in from outside if they don't hear me. And otherwise, if you do hear me, welcome to anybody who is listening in. And with this, I also want to say many, many thanks to Justin, Marissa, and Alex for taking this on top of all the other duties they had already in organizing this workshop. They sort of last minute managed to set this up as well. They're just incredible. So thank you very much. Also, before we start the session, I want to use this opportunity to just express my immense sense of gratitude to all of you in the CubeSat community for, without any hesitation whatsoever, to just embrace the challenges that we're now proposing and posing on you. And for also giving a really warm welcome to the space science community into your program. That has been really amazing to experience that. And I felt it first when I went last summer and talked to you at the one-day workshop out at the small satellite conference. And it has only been confirmed in all the conversations I've had with many of you since then. And it is really, it has been and it still is a really important factor in making this program a reality. On the other side, though not many of you are here, maybe some more of you are listening in, so on the other side, I also need to thank, and I'm really grateful, to the space science community, that the level of interest and participation that this has already generated in that community is also quite overwhelming, and I'm so pleased with it. It's surpassing all my expectations. So thank you guys for jumping on this and wanting to help make it a success. In the words of Humphrey Bogart, since we're in California, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship. And with that, let's start the session. The main purpose of this is, first of all, for me to provide you some more details on how we're thinking to implement this program. Last summer, I told you about our grand plans and what we want to do with the program, how it fits in, the kind of science we're hoping to achieve. Now, how are we going to implement it? How are we going to make it all work? I'll tell you a little bit about our thoughts on that, but for an important reason, because I need some feedback on that. We need to set something up. This is new. It's new to me. It's new to NSF. It's probably new for all of you to deal with NSF and get this kind of grants, at least from NSF. So we need to start a dialogue on how best to set up a reasonable process that works for everybody. Both for you to apply for the grants, but also how to manage this kind of project, both for me and for you. So that's what I have tried to put together. What I will do is I'll give a really brief just run through of the program and of with mostly a focus on this first solicitation and the application process and what's going to happen this summer. And then hopefully leave a lot of time for you for your questions and comments and feedback. Forward. Okay. So basically what we're trying to set up is a program to do science missions, to promote atmospheric, space weather and atmospheric research and education based on CubeSat missions. What we hope to be able to do is to launch 2 to 3 peapods funded by this program every year. And we have for now secured at least the first launch in December of 2009. And unfortunately, because we now had to shift the schedule, I wanted to use this opportunity to thank the Space Test Program, who is providing this first launch for us, and have already provided launches for other parts of the community, and will again later this fall. It's really a tremendous effort on their part to make these possibilities open to the CubeSat community, and I wanted us all to thank them. But now, unfortunately, they had to leave just before now to catch their flights. Inside 2 to 3 peapods, we will fit any number of science missions, depending on whether you do your science mission with a 1U or 3U CubeSat. But a number of science missions, as many as will fit in the peapods we're able to fly. We have put for now as a cap on each of the missions at a $900,000 cap on each of the grants that you can receive for a mission. We do expect, of course, that if you're doing a small mission with a 1U CubeSat, that you will not need the full cap. Otherwise, the budget of this, of course, won't hold, and we won't be able to do 2 or 3 missions a year. But you can all do the math in that, I'm sure. The selection of missions, we're asking for proposals. We're going to go through a selection process, and I'll talk more about that in a moment. The selection will be based almost sort of half and half on the potential science return, that is, on the exciting science you think your mission can accomplish, but also on the training opportunities that you're doing your project will provide for students, maybe even for young faculty. So we have not put any, very often when NSF put out requests for proposals, solicitations we call them, they're limited to certain types of institutions. We decided not to do that, which means that anybody can participate, but we do make the student, a significant student participation in almost throughout the whole project mandatory. If you don't have that, you're not going to be chosen. It's as simple as I can put it. So the first solicitation is just out. Most of you probably know that by now. With a deadline for May 28. What are we looking for? The proposals, just a brief overview. We are looking for, what we will do is what we consider typical NSF single investigator grants. So they're typical 3, they can be up to 5 years. As I said, we put a cap on 900,000. We expect them to come in at anywhere between 300,000 to 900,000 for each of the grants. They have to cover complete missions. Your proposals have to describe a complete science mission. It means the satellite design, the payload design too, of course, the type of measurement you want to make, construction of the satellite, a testing program, the operations, how to get the data down, and also how to distribute the data out to some users and a little bit of data analysis. So that's what it needs to entail. That's what we give you the money for, basically. In addition to that, we do realize that some additional infrastructure support is needed. First of all, NSF doesn't do the launches. We need to provide those or get those provided from some other source. We will arrange them and we will pay for those separately. We do not expect each of the projects to go out and arrange that for themselves. So for now we have agreements with the DoD Space Test Program, as I just mentioned. We have manifested on the first launch, December 2009. And we are talking to them also about, they do expect to have several opportunities a year also in the near future. But we're not manifested on any of those yet. I think we've been very busy setting this up, so next thing we will talk about what comes for 2010 and beyond. And there's also, I've talked to many of you during the meeting here, there's some signals coming from other places that other launch opportunities could open up, and we're certainly standing ready to try to utilize as many of them as possible. So we will work with anybody who is interested to provide launch opportunities for this program. In addition, we have enlisted the help of NASA. We have set up an agreement with the group out of at Wallops, the Wallops Flight Facility, the group who's also providing support for the Sounding Rocket program, because we realize the kind of support we will need for these PI-driven missions are very similar to the kind of support that they have been used to giving to the Sounding Rocket community. So they basically will be in charge of the contracts to purchase the P-PODs, to do the integration, to do the acceptance testing of the satellite. They will be the technical point of contact where you will have to take your satellite to, because I'm not somebody who can receive a satellite and send pass it on to the DoD for launch. So they will be handling that. They will basically be your technical point of contact. They will also be the ones helping to make sure that the documentation is fulfilling all the requirements that we get from the DoD. And they have a long experience doing that for the Sounding Rocket community, and I know many of the potential PIs therefore already have already been doing. We know them from the Sounding Rocket program, and we share a lot of those PIs with NASA. So I think that is going to work to everybody's satisfaction. A little bit more about the first launch opportunity, and this I put it up this way because that's the way you will find it, if you're able to, as part of the solicitation. There's one link. Unfortunately, the NSF website system for solicitation is very governed and restricted, and it's not easy to put this kind of ad hoc changing information in there. I was allowed to put it this way. It's basically a Word document that I can edit, and soon I will start doing it as I need to. But for now, this is how it looks, and it just describes very briefly some of the characteristics of this first launch that we have manifested with the STP program. One condition they put on this particular launch opportunity is that they will only accept a single satellite, a single 3U satellite inside that P-pod. So that's if you want to propose to be on that first launch, that you have to fulfill that. It has to be a 3U satellite you're proposing. And there are also some, because of now the, unfortunately, our solicitation kept getting postponed because of we were operating on a continued resolution and therefore was not allowed to start up new programs. So we got I realize now that we're on a very tight schedule. The solicitation came out late. The deadline is not till May, and still we have to fulfill a very tight schedule for delivery of this first satellite. And I just hope that some of you will be able to do that, and that we can still put together an exciting mission for this first launch. I realize it's pushing it even more than we had hoped, and that even more than we hope we will have to do in the future. We hopefully can get into some sort of steady state where it's all a little bit more reasonable. But for this first one, if you propose for it, I hope many of you will be ready to do it. Just be aware that there's some tight deadlines for deliverables then to fulfill. I will list some of that a little bit in a little bit more detail. So what's going to happen? The proposals are going to come in on May 28th or before, if you're ready. And as all NSF grants, they have to be based on a peer review process that is pretty set in NSF. There's not a lot of wiggle room we have in how we do that. On the other hand, that's all pretty streamlined and straightforward. We know how to do it. What I will do is there will be a panel set up. Right now, for the number of proposals I hear, you telling me how many of you are thinking of proposing, it may be anywhere between 20 or 30 proposals I expect to receive, which means I will need a panel of about 16 to 20 people. I intend to make that up of approximately half aerospace engineering expertise and half space physics expertise. And so I know basically pretty much all the space physicists, and I can easily ask them to participate. But if any of you engineers here that I have talked to, oops, during the meeting here should suddenly receive an email requesting your help in serving on this panel, I hope you will consider it positively and see if you can help me do this. It's exciting too. I know on that NSF is relying, just like you're all used to from the CubeSat program, on your voluntary assistance in this very important process for doing the evaluation of the science we do. So the panel will then, what the way it works is that each proposal will be sent out to four people as soon as I get them in. Four of these panelists will receive each of the proposals, will go to four people, and they will provide a written evaluation. And then once those will all be in before then the panel meet for deliberations on July 8 and 9, where then the panel will discuss each of the proposals, look at all the evaluations that have come in, and make a final sort of summary evaluation recommendation and a recommendation for a ranking for how they think these proposals rank compared to each other. And they will provide me with that. I will sit together with my management and we will from that make a selection on who we will recommend for an award. The process within NSF is that I don't decide. I only make recommendations. I'm not the one giving out the money. I'm the one who does my best at making an expertise guess at what is the best proposal to put forward. I need all your help with that. That's why we set up the panels, because I don't know everything, and I certainly know very little about aerospace engineering. I can assure you of that. I'm not claiming anything else. But then send you the money is the NSF Grants Office. So we make the recommendation to the Grants Office, and then they go through their processes. So if you plan to be in this first batch, you're interested to get an award, to be in this first selection, to be on this mission that flies in December 2009. You can help yourself tremendously by getting your sponsored research office, whoever it is take care of these things at your institution, get them involved. Make sure they know what it takes to apply for money at NSF, what it takes to receive money from NSF. Set it all up so you are ready to get the money when we are ready to send them. Because sometimes that can otherwise be a delay of several months to set that all up so that the grants office is satisfied that they can send the money to your institution. In case you've never received an NSF award before, it can even be half a year. Then I'm sorry, then it just won't work. So please do as much of that homework that you can beforehand. That's just a small warning. Most of the universities are perfectly set up already to do all this. Just talk to the appropriate person at your institution. So with that small proviso that maybe there's some hiccup between the grants office and your sponsored research office, or what it's called at your institution, we should be able to start the first award in September. Many people have been asking that. The main focus on this first selection round is, of course, to find a mission and select a mission for the first launch in December 2009, the one we are manifested on and the only one we have lined up right now, to be quite honest, although I'm working hard on getting some more lined up. We also do plan to then select, out of the batch of proposals we receive in May, another one or two proposals that we will start, even though the launch will be in the future and we're not certain of the launch yet. We do intend to start one or two other projects that can start slowly, getting their mission built and getting it ready. We need to break the circle somehow, and it's a real chicken and egg problem. You either cannot get a launch because you don't have a mission to fly, or you cannot get a mission because you do not have a launch. So we try to just break it, get it started, and if you get selected for one of these follow-on missions, you just start your work, you start building, and at the same time I work on finding a suitable launch for you. And those, as those of you familiar with government funding will now see, I say the selection of those will be sometime in October, because I will need the new batch of funding that hopefully comes with the new fiscal year for me to start those missions. So it could even be a little bit later, depending on negotiations and how the budgets look and stuff. But we do plan to do more than the one mission. So if you're not ready for December, please still, we're still very much interested to receive your proposal, even if you are aiming for a mission in 2010 or 2011. And we also are setting this up, and we fully intend to run this as a continual program. There will be an annual solicitation. It's the same solicitation unless your feedback made me make big changes to it. It's meant to be out there for the next several years, with a deadline every year from now on in February. It's just I didn't manage to get it through for February this year because of the continued resolution. Now I show here a few excerpts from the solicitation, just because there's been a lot. That's why I get many of the questions, is sort of on the interpretation and how literally to take the wording that I put in the solicitation as guideline for what kind of proposal we would like to see. And one of the important things that I think should be a major guideline for you is what are the criteria that these proposals are going to be reviewed on. NSF has a whole set, a very fixed set of criteria that we all have to abide by, which is that these proposals will be selected based or reviewed based on their intellectual merit, the extent to which they advance science and understanding within the field you're proposing, and they are reviewed with respect to the, we call it broader impacts, that's the NSF term for how they advance education, could also be community building, infrastructure, things like that. But then I put up, for this particular program, we have a set of additional criteria that I will give to the review panel to evaluate these proposals against. The science goals, that's sort of, it's a little bit just reiterating the intellectual merit, but it's to also point out that you could have intellectual merit in some great engineering research. Unfortunately, I have to do this out of the way it is. We're doing this for the space weather and atmospheric science missions. So the space weather or atmospheric science goal that you propose has to be an important parameter in the selection. As I've mentioned several times, we do have as a mandatory ingredient in your proposal is student training. That has to be really prominent, a prominent part of the project setup or how you set it all up. Another thing that I've called it technical feasibility, that's where the engineers on my panel come in. They have to give me good guidance on whether what is proposed is sound, is reasonable, is doable, it has a high level of I wouldn't say. Let me just put it. Reasonable, sound, a good approach. Looks like it could work. Let me put it that way, because it's not that we will accept risk. We are willing to try something new and advanced and maybe crazy. But it has to still be based on sound principles. Something that when you write this, when you look at this, when you propose it, just think that you need to convince your colleagues. You need to be able to convince your fellow engineers or your fellow scientists that this is a good idea. This is something we should do. And finally, something that I called, in a very general sense, a management plan. We do realize that the success of these missions will require some sort of some level of thought on your part on how you run this whole project. It's not something we usually are big on when we do the pure science grants, because it's typically just one or two researchers working on their problem. It's a lot of thinking and computers and maybe data analysis. It doesn't take a whole lot of sort of traditional management, certainly not people management or project management. So I do realize that these proposals will have to be a little bit different in that sense, and it's just pointing that out to you. You need to again present us a credible plan for how you intend to run this project, how you intend to manage it. So that's what that means. Similar, which is a bit, another thing that's a little bit unusual for our standard NSF, the NSF awards that we typically give out in my division for research grants, is that we do put some additional conditions on these awards. There are things we expect you as the winning PI to do and to abide by. For instance, that we do know that we will be given specific requirements in terms of testing requirements and documentation from the launch provider, and you will of course sign up to help provide the data and the input that we need to fulfill those requirements. So that's one thing that we'll say. It's mainly a legal thing. It's again the thing that goes to your sponsored research office, that the university on your behalf will sign up that they will hold you to, I can call you up and ask for these documents, and you will have to do it or we stop the funding. That's basically how it goes. It's the only repercussion we have is stopping your funding. Another thing is the schedule. You do sign up to know that there is a schedule, that you will have to deliver at some given time your satellite for the launch, and you need to work out a schedule and show it to me and to the other people involved, the launch provider, the people at Wallops, that there is a reasonable schedule that you will follow to complete this mission on time. It's also a good idea for your own sake. Project status updates. It's also something we are not really used to doing a lot with, but where I feel I have to do it a little bit different for this particular program. The traditional or the usual way of at NSF is that you're required to write a yearly report, and that's the mechanism for releasing the next year's funding. Is you send in an annual report, I approve it, hopefully, and you get your next batch of money. It's not quite going to cut it for this program, so I do want you to sign up to give me regular updates. I don't want to dictate more than absolutely more than I have to. So I'm not going to dictate at what level and when and how you're going to do it. It's going to fit your management plan, that whenever you do have some reviews or whenever you do have some milestones as your project progresses, you sign up to let me know about it. I don't envision anything formal. I don't envision anything that takes a lot of time on your part. As we get, maybe we'll start up with a monthly telecon where I just listen in to any of your project meetings or anything like that, and then we can do it more regularly as we get closer to your delivery time. Something like that. And you also do sign up for actually having to do set deliverables, which is also not quite what we are used to when dealing with pure research grants. There we want you to write lots of exciting science papers, and that's your deliverable. Give presentations at science meeting, talk to your colleagues, spread your knowledge. But here we do need you to actually end up delivering a spacecraft. Yeah, so it's just to point this out in a legal sense, we do expect you to do that. And we also do want you to sign up to help me, the project, anybody involved, solve any problems that occur. It's all, I try to do it reasonable. I try to do it something everybody could agree is just common sense. And many people have asked, but there really is nothing more behind these words than what I just say. They are exactly the words. You can put into them anything you think is reasonable. Again, the guideline is you need to convince your colleagues that, and me, but also your colleagues, that this is what you propose is a sound approach. And I'm not going to demand anything beyond that in any formal sense. There's some of the questions I've been getting is about how then we get into the technical details. We get into what do you recommend for this? What do you recommend for that? And I certainly am not the one to recommend anything. That's why we're so grateful to be part of the CubeSat community. They work out all these things. And as I've learned sitting through the sessions at this meeting, I know as there should be, there's not necessarily a one set best solution for everything. And you're working on that, and I certainly don't want to stop that. That should happen. That should go on. but just here I list some of the things that I have been aware of and that I think it's useful to share with you. One question I've had from a number of people is whether it's it's a real strict restriction to do the 3 kilo mass for this 3-unit CubeSat for the first Peapod launch. And I have so far referred everybody to say, I don't know. It needs to be able to be launched in a Peapod. So that unfortunately puts the question back to Jordi and his team. I know that it's not a restriction that is imposed by the launch opportunity we've been given. There, the total payload, including the CubeSat, the baseline there is 8.5 kilograms. So no, I don't see there's any big technical difficulties with going beyond the 3 kilograms, but really the burden of proof is on you in your proposal to point out any way you can or talk to Jordi, see what he will accept of what is whether this will whether there's some documentation, some proof that this is doable. I don't know what the Peapod is qualified for, but he certainly does. So please, if you're considering that, if you think that would be a big impact, would be a big advantage for your mission, for the thing you want to do, please talk to Jordi and see if you can come to some agreement about it. Another issue that people ask me all the time is the communication, the telemetry. And the group at Wallops stands ready to help us with that. And I have agreed with them that we think we can support both an UHF and S-band options, and that they are willing to help provide the licenses we need for in either of those regimes. I know people also, some projects prefer and have intend to stay with the amateur option, like they're doing now for their CubeSats. I must honestly say I don't know if that works. I'm not a licensed amateur radio operator. I don't know what the rules are and how they will be interpreted. But if you are a licensed radio operator for your project and you think this is a viable option, again, a little bit the burden of proof will be on you. You will have to at least assure me that that the satellite is not going to be turned off or have to be turned off because this doesn't work. So there will be some, you'll have to do a little bit more than just say that's what we did in the past, because there is the issue potentially of providing federal funding and then it cannot be under the amateur agreement. So be aware of that. I'm not saying it's not doable. I'm saying, again, the burden of proof is on you. And on the other hand, we do stand ready to make this legal, okay, using the federal option and getting the licenses you need. As for this kind of, it's just elaborating a little bit on the type of deliverables you will have to help us provide. This is the requirements, as far as I have them right now, from the launch provider. This is the kind of thing they will need your input for, to make sure we can launch your spacecraft. And it's simply the law. We have to comply with these National Environment Protection Act and with the space policy compliance. I mean, that's a given. We have to do that. I mean, I'm just giving you a heads up on, as I have understood it, what that implies. And again, the people at Wallops stand ready to help you with that. All I put it up here because if you're the chosen mission and you start in September, that will be one of the very first things you need to provide is the input so that we can finish, at least have a first draft of these documents. And we're working on these documents with the DoD, and as soon as you are chosen, we will give you whatever templates they have and they provide us, and we'll start working on that. That's just a heads up. That will be one of your very first tasks, so please be prepared for that. If you are selected, you'll have to help us comply with that. Otherwise, we are a no-fly. The same goes for the second point, the securing the safety at the launch. And to comply with these schedules that the DoD is setting up, unfortunately, I think when it all boils down, the bottom line is that if you want to be in the December 2009 launch, you cannot expect to deliver your spacecraft, the final version of your spacecraft, to Wallops for integration into the Peapod no later than late July of 2009. That's what you should aim for. That's what your schedule should reflect. So that's when it will be undergoing acceptance testing. It will be integrated into the Peapod, and the final payload will be tested to make sure it fulfills the launch requirements. There is, in the agreement we're setting up with Wallops, they will offer you, if you so choose, that you can go a few weeks earlier with your satellite system and use the test facilities to do a final testing on the satellite itself before they sort of do the formal, now it's handed over, while you still have a chance to work on things. So that's something you will not have to include that in your budget, except for sending people there. They will allow you access to their facilities for that. And then just a little bit of the outlook. This is the first step. Doing this CubeSat program is really what we hope to be the first step of a more widespread program to do space, weather, and atmospheric research based on small satellite missions. We see there's a lot of exciting things you can do, and we really hope to be able to grow this program. Our aim is, within a few years, to have $5 to $10 million a year to do this. And then I think if we are successful in that, we really can start to do something. And I don't know whether this will move us away from the CubeSats. Personally, I don't actually think so. There's this, it was when we first started talking about using small satellites and setting up a program that would utilize small satellites to do the science, we always thought, well, eventually we'll start with CubeSats. Maybe we will, as we get more money into the program, we will evolve to maybe larger systems. But hearing and learning about all the exciting things you're actually able to do with CubeSats, I'm not even sure that's necessary. So we will see. But for now, the first step at least is this CubeSat program. And now I've talked way longer than I should have, and I hope we still have lots of time for your questions, comments, and feedback. So it's actually part of the agreement we're setting up with Wallops. They will do that using the usual way that is done at NASA. We do have spectrum managers at NSF also, but they're not used to doing satellites, and they will be standing by to help, but they have no experience with it. And also I think they are in the astronomy division, and they come actually quite from the other side of it. They are very worried about us as an additional source of noise for what they are trying to do. But we will work with them too. But basically this is part of the agreement we're setting up with Wallops to help with that.
You mentioned, Teresa, the single PI mode for these. Did you mean to
Not at all. I should have called it a single grant, single award. Certainly we welcome collaborations between institutions. That's no problem at all. The NSF system allows you to do it two different ways, and there are pros and cons with both of them. I can quickly outline them. If you are several institutions and you want to work together, you can either do what we call a collaborative proposal. It means you write one proposal, but you submit it from each institution individually. There will be one lead proposer, and the others are just participating in institutions. But the proposals should be exactly identical. It's one project idea, basically. What you do submit individually from each institution is your separate budget. And that's the difference. That's the difference to the other way you can do it. So in this model, you do a collaborative. We call it collaborative. You have to have your title when you submit your proposal. It has to start with collaborative, so we can identify it as such and link the proposals together. And then each institution gets their own budget. You can also do collaborations where you just submit the proposal from one institution with a PI and have co-PIs at other institutions, which you then fund through sub-awards that sort of get channeled through your institution. The disadvantage sometimes with that, depending on how your institution is set up to operate, is that you sometimes end up paying double overhead rates on some of that. And that's why people prefer sometimes the other. But it all depends on how your institution is set up. If they will allow these sub-awards to pass through without additional overhead to the other institution, then that's just as easy. And it sometimes can give a little bit more flexibility because then you as the lead PI will have full control over the budget. And if things need to change, it can be changed. But the other way, it's also in some way... In other ways, it's easier that each institution just gets their own money. Exactly. Yeah. If your institution charge pass through overhead, then you save some money. Yeah. Yeah. It could be. So it's up to you. You can do both.
I fear that most aerospace engineers are not sufficiently familiar with small technology efforts to really be able to judge a 900K project, and I'm afraid that the minority do are probably going to be heavily represented among the proposers. Have you thought of some mechanism to deal with that problem?
I'm trying my best to find, even though they are so... It's going back to Sandy Montgomery's dinosaur quote this morning.
Mm-hmm.
There are dinosaurs that are willing to think the right way so that they could still be a useful expertise. I think it's a matter of finding the people who are supportive of this effort and knows what it is about. So I hope... I haven't tried it yet, but I will do my best to make it work. I think almost every single division in ASSF should be interested in joining us in this. So far, I haven't had much traction, but I keep trying. And what I do intend to do, the same goes actually for the engineering division, because certainly a lot of the exciting things here happening is in engineering as much as in science, and especially with the student involvement and the educational part. So I keep pushing. I think engineering should be interested in this. And once I have the proposals, it will be much easier for me to make that case because I can show them what it is people intend to do in such a program. So I think there's still a good chance that they will like it once they see what it is. Yes, that's part of the arrangement we have with them. Mm-hmm. I think they put aside, you can come a few weeks before that final date, and I think they put aside I'll have to double check, but I think it's about a week time or so they will allow you to use it. There is, his name is Scott Scher. But if you get chosen, we will make sure you get hooked up immediately. If you get, once you're selected, if you're the selected people, we will certainly make that connection immediately, hook you up.
Excuse me, can you repeat your question?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, the last question was whether I know the contact at Wallops already, and I do. His name is Scott Scher, but I will also, making that connection will be one of the first things we do when we have a selection of a mission. So far, the first launch is not going to be a one of. Thank you. The question was whether all the launches are going to be at Wallops. So far, I don't know at all where all the future launches are going to be from. The first launch is going to be out of Kodiak. It's not going to be at Wallops. They're just doing the commissioning. They're accepting these spacecraft and integrating them into the P-PODs, doing the testing. Yeah, Doc? Yeah, the question is whether for the ground stations, if Wallops is actually providing a ground station or if they're just providing oversight and help. For now, they're signed up for oversight and help, but they stand ready in case it. The first thing they will do is, on this point, is they, for the selected mission, they will look over what you plan to do, and they will help me evaluate if that is good enough or whether we need to establish something different else more. But we also do not, as with all the other things, we really would like this to be as much hands-off as we can. So I do not want, unless I have to, and unless you tell me as a community it's better to work towards a common standard, like for the people out here, that I will not dictate a set solution. I think it's up to you if you to put together your solution, what you will propose. But you can, on the other hand, if you you're willing to talk to me and talk to Wallops, if you would like them to be part of your solution, then it can be written in. But then you also need to provide probably room for that in your budget. The question is whether we have given any thought to the potential oversubscribing the mission, so that if the mission we choose is not ready for launch at the time they need to be, that another one could stand ready to take over. No, I did not plan to run it in that way, simply because the missions while they're certainly not big, expensive missions, they do have some certain cost, and I cannot start too many of them. It's simply, maybe it will evolve that way if launch opportunities become more frequent, and I can, have a much more floating schedule on who finishes and who launches. But for now, I have to do it in a more traditional way. And if something should happen that you're not ready for launch, then we'll try to launch you as soon as we can. And yeah, I will leave it a little bit up to the space test program to see if they can fill up that spot then.
It's okay to follow up on that point. Would you then just fly ballast?
Yes, the question is whether, if that should occur, whether I will fly ballast or allow somebody else to fly, and that really is not my decision. It will be the space test program. For what, the only thing we have signed up on is that if we cannot deliver, we will deliver ballast, and that's the only thing I can do. Yeah, the question was, just to clarify, that I'll do the question as the answer, that because you're right, that once we pick the first mission to start in September, we will also, very soon thereafter, at the same time, start up the one or two next missions for future flights, and that's correct, that's what we intend to do. We're very sensitive to the fact that this should not be a one-off shot and a one-off deal. So if you take serious the question of allowing risk, then you have to also not just focus all your attention and energy on the first one mission. So it's a little bit also to take the pressure off of that. We do intend to fly many, not just the one. We'll do that.
Yeah.
Okay, let me clarify. The question is whether that there's some confusion between saying the cap is 900,000 for the mission, but then we also expect some of them to come in cheaper, and how that is possible, because as he points out, and he's correct, a typical research grant at NSF is about $300,000, so if you take that off, and then you also need to build a satellite, that's another $300K, but how can you even do it for less than $300K, for less than $900K? And yes, you're right, it's always good to be cheap, I would say, but you can be cheap in many ways, or low cost, to call it, to not be derogatory. You're certainly allowed to bring in additional funding. We do not necessarily have to fund the full mission. So that's one way. I also left it in there because I do not expect a 1U single mission to be as expensive as a 3U mission. You're right, for the science, what is the trade-off? Can you really expect to do a mission for 300K? Maybe not. Maybe I will have to just... But it's a hope that the cheaper they come in, the more we can do. So it's just, it was to not have everybody think I will only give out chunks of $900,000. Yeah, the question is whether for the first launch, there's a restriction that it can only be one satellite, a 3U satellite, whether for the subsequent missions, the future missions, we have a preference in size, 1U, 2U, or 3U. No, that should hopefully be determined by the science. Whatever it takes to do exciting science is what you should propose. Actually, we do not expect you to deliver any documents. I expect Wallops to deliver documents on my behalf with your input. I don't know if that makes a difference, but that's how we're trying to set it up. Yeah, they're on board to help you produce those documents. And we try to keep them to a minimum. So far, I think there are three documents we're talking to that the STP is requiring. It's an interface control document. We're working on a template right now, and there will be a ground observations plan, and there will be the materials list for the safety document. And as far as I know, that's about it. Wallops is thinking that just for clarity, they should probably work with Cal Poly once their contract is set up to do also an interface control document between the satellite and the peapod, just to make sure that whether there's any special things needing to be updated or to make a formal document out of that. But it should be very close to what you're all used to. So that I hope that's it. But yeah. I'd be happy to repeat that to everybody. Gary Hendel from the Space Test Program called in and said that if the original payload cannot be delivered on time, but an additional payload or another payload, an alternative payload fulfilling the same requirements can be found somewhere, it's up to NSF to allow that to take the original one's place. And sure, thank you. I didn't know I had that much power. But so in that case, I believe I will be coming right back to Jordi and ask if he has something on the shelf that needs to be flown. But let's not be pessimistic. Yeah, of course you'll build something that works on time. The question is whether we have any specific expectations as to the blend, the mix of graduate and undergraduate students that participate. No. Short answer. Traditionally, for the research grants, we typically give out, because it is a sort of forefront research, we tend to do more graduate students than undergraduates, but we're perfectly happy to realize that this program may be doing more for the undergraduates, that would be an additional reason to do it. So. Yeah, in that case, you're correct. You've been... The question is whether, following up on that, I have any expectations for the blend of nationalities of students working on the projects. I do not, but I do know that I'm being asked about what do we do about ITA, and I personally hope I will have nothing to do with ITA, but I do have to point out also that is not... I do not have the authority to say that we do not need to worry about it. It's unfortunately on each institution to make sure they fulfill those laws. So it's up to the university. I'm afraid that's how it stands. I unfortunately cannot help much there. The question is whether, again following up on the educational question, whether there's an expectation of fall down from down to K-12 and general education, informal education, like it's often required at NASA. No, not particularly. We are traditionally and typically geared very much toward the university community. It's not that the other kind of educational activities would not be counted, they sure would, but we have no expectation that it goes more in one direction or another. Both in my mind is valuable and justified. The question is whether for the subsequent launches, the future launches, if we know anything about the possible orbits that we can get. Unfortunately, no. I expect most of them to be low Earth orbit. But there's a lot of things happening in allowing P-POD flight opportunities. And unfortunately, I don't. The question was then, if your science require a certain orbit, you'll have to write that into the proposal, and whether NSF will then go out and try to find a suitable launch. And the question and the answer is yes. That's what I intend to do. I know my possibilities are not that great right now. I do not have a lot of places to go, but so it would be good if you are as flexible as possible in the orbits you need to do your science. And I would also encourage maybe to have more than, if you can do a primary science and an additional science, so that, right now I think that would have to increase your chances simply because the number of launches are so few. If I had plenty of launches, then it wouldn't matter so much. So maybe it will change within the next few years, we can all hope. But it will be a puzzle, and it's a puzzle I'll have to do together with everybody in the launch community and all of you. Yeah. Yeah, the question is, and there seems to be like a mismatch between the criteria that I said I was going to evaluate the proposal on a set of certain criteria, and then how big an impact it will be, or how much weight it will be given to the possibility of getting a certain orbit. It's hard for me to answer right now. If I hope it will not be too much of a disadvantage to ask for a specific orbit if I think I can provide it. So if you're thinking low Earth orbit, I think it's all doable. If you are asking for some more exotic kind of orbit, or even not exotic, right now I don't know of any, geostationary transfer orbits that have launches that have accepted CubeSats. But it's not, on the other hand, it's not unreasonable to think that I could make such an agreement with somebody in the future. So. Yeah, the comment from Jordi, let me just repeat if there's somebody listening, that right now the launch opportunity, simply from the launches that are capable of bringing Peapods along, are set to certain orbits simply from where they launch from, and it will be mainly sort of at least semi-polar orbits that will be favored in the near future, unless some other launch possibilities come along. So it will all, I mean, we heard earlier today about the initiative in Hawaii that will open up some equatorial launches if we can team up with them. So. Okay, the question is whether we could provide some more information on the setup with Wallops before the proposals are due, so you can tailor your proposal to that. And that's a good idea. I'll do that. It will have to be, unfortunately, in the same way as with that first launch. It's the only way I'm legally allowed to do that. But I can put some more details on the specific agreement we have with Wallops, so you know what to expect. The question is what the minimum mission lifetime is. Whatever you think you can do, it will again. Hopefully, it has to be connected to the science. I mean, the science will drive many of these questions. Yeah, I think we used our time, so I don't know if there's any more last-minute questions. Otherwise, thank you very much. This is very helpful. So helpful for me to hear what the question is.